Today is a great day for a car wash.
Yeah, sure. Car wash. This is the car wash on the SL podcast. Sizohlangana khona.
Good day and welcome to episode number 91 of the Car Wash. On today's show, fans back in the stadium, question mark, Truta's job on the line, and drug testing is back. Whether you are tuning in on SL Podcast.co.za, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, or Mucky Ken 96.7 Game Time, welcome to the show. I'm your host, Sean Roberts, and of course, I'm not alone. Please welcome my good friend, Teko Madise.
Hey, how are you, Seanisto?
Good, and you, Tex? What's happening your side, buddy? Busy, busy, I see.
Yeah, I'm busy, but we continue. We live.
We're making progress.
Of course.
And talking about progress, my jokes are progressing weekly. How's that intro, bro? So, why is it cheaper to throw a party in a haunted house? Because the ghosts will bring the booze.
We don't believe in ghosts as black people, so.
You don't?
No.
Spirits?
Yeah, maybe. Whatever. Yeah,
that's another podcast altogether. So let's just chat about what's been happening in terms of the government deciding and then not deciding and then giving the go-ahead and then not giving the go-ahead. Then allowing X amount of fans in the stadium, but only vaccinated. And now all of a sudden, I think it was yesterday, Aiden, our producer, alluded us to the fact that it is now only 165 people, vaccinated people, allowed in the stadium. Teko, we were just talking off air and you enlightened us that if you look at the emergency staff there, the backroom staff, the television crew, you're already up to about 160, 170. So do you think they're talking about actual fans allowed, or is it still going to be empty?
I think they're talking of actual fans, because they can't be considering both teams and their staff members and the securities and the production side. Because yeah, if you count everybody that's on game day, it's for me, I think it's more than 200, because I don't know from production side how many are allowed since of the regulation, but I'm sure over 60, over 70 people that comes through to do the game. And for me to come back to the situation of fans coming back into the stadium, I think we need to be realistic about it. I think the reality is we are allowed to go to establishments that or gatherings that are 2,000. Two's gone, 2K. We are allowed to gather with 2,000 people, but at the stadium you only allowed to have 200.
So how does that make sense?
It's a fucking joke.
Yeah.
We have a capacity. F&B is a capacity of 90,000 or something, right? Let me say this, Sean. With fans that needs to come to the stadium that are vaccinated, I don't have a problem with that, because we want to drive the vaccination. Right. What I'm saying is, find a solution in this way. All these teams, let's say maybe the Sundowns is playing KZ Chiefs in 2 weeks time.
Yeah.
They're saying to KZ Chiefs, if you want the fans to come into, they say to Sundowns, if you want your fans to come through to the stadium, we can only give you maybe, let's say, 10,000 capacity. 10,000 for fans to come through, and then you split half up between KZ Chiefs. Only if you manage to get all the fans that are coming to the stadium vaccinated. So us as Mamelodi Sundowns, or any other team that have been given that responsibility, you go to where your fans are. You make sure that your fans are vaccinated because you want them to come to the stadium.
Sure.
Do you understand what I'm saying? So it in that way, the drive of vaccination becomes quicker. But then you can't come and tell us that, okay, guys, the final MTN, let's say, for instance, they say, let's test it with MTN final. Mm. Then the MTN final is at in Durban, because it's been in Durban. And then you go to Durban, and the capacity is 90,000, because that's a World Cup stadium, 90,000 sure. capacity. And then you say, guys,
no stadium, yeah.
Yeah. We build the stages for people to perform, but only 200 people must come through. But outside the stadium, in the pubs and whatnot, we can gather 2,000, it's fine. You can go to churches, it's fine.
Yeah.
I mean, really, guys.
It doesn't make sense. I mean, but we saw a glimpse of it with Bafana against Ethiopia, which we'll talk about now. And I think it was 2,000 allowed. Was that the rule in the stadium?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. We'll check with our producer.
Mr. Facts.
And then literally a few days later, the government's changed its mind against her. But John, like what you said, Tico, it makes no sense. We allowed 2,000 people at a gathering in an outdoor event, but
and football is an outdoor event, bro. It's a f***ing outdoor event. It's summer. It's 32 degrees.
You can't split the people, right? Like
you split the people.
Yeah.
Give the teams that are playing home a responsibility to make sure that the stands people sit accordingly. But don't tell us 200 or the capacity of a 90,000 stadium, and then what's that? You might as well tell the production crew to come and watch the game.
Yeah, it's obviously some. I don't know if it's hidden agendas or what, but it's just...
No, there's a problem. Look, dude, I'm not in the political space, and I don't want to get into politics, but it's just that something needs to be sorted out in terms of sports. Mm. I think we've been neglected for a long time, and I'm sure that people that are involved in those type of positions are talking the talk, but I just feel like with what's happening right now, we need to get into a conclusion. Mm. If even if it means... teams getting responsibilities or doing their CSRs, making sure that their fans get vaccinated and come back into the stadium.
That's such a good point, eh? And Aiden, just make a note of that, please. Like, in terms of, are teams doing any of these sort of drives? I mean, I know you're an ambassador now of Sundowns, which is amazing, which we can also get into in another podcast, but are Sundowns pushing this? Are the boys on the road with their masks and encouraging guys to vaccinate?
Look. I think at Sundowns I don't think any team. Let me just speak about Sundowns because we haven't had this discussion yet. But I think any team that can be given that responsibility, right? Every team now wants their fans to come back, irrespective of how many fans you have. Like for instance, for smaller teams, like the teams that we know that they were like 500, 2,000 fans.
Yeah.
That's nothing to come into the stadium. Yeah. That's just a portion. They can come. But the thing is, I'm saying if you want people to really vaccinate, we've got a lot of fans. South Africa, sports is huge in South Africa.
Massive.
Whether it's massive, whether people decide to come to the stadium or not. But I can tell you now that if they say to us, guys, Sundowns are playing Kaizer Chiefs in 2 weeks' time, and we want to allow 20,000 fans on a 90,000.
And it'll be like a lottery, you know, like a lottery ticket. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And with those 20,000 fans, we only need 20,000 vaccinated people. Mm-hmm. Sundowns, we're giving you, because it's your home game, we're giving you tickets of 15,000.
Yeah.
Chiefs, your visiting team, we're giving 5,000 vaccinated fans.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, at Sundowns, we have a responsibility to make sure that all the fans that are coming to the game are vaccinated. So prior to that, we'll do what we're supposed to do because we want the fans to come back into the game. And once you see that happening, other teams will come forth because they'll start playing their part. But the thing is, now you're not sure because the statement is not coming correct with all these things happening. So the teams actually get into the position. They don't know whether the fans will be allowed. If, let's say, just come out and say, guys, we can only allow fans to come back into the stadium once they're vaccinated, and we're giving you let's test maybe with such and such a game. You've got a mandate, you've got a period where you can work where things around. As much as the pictures are congested, but teams do have people that can do all those things on the ground.
Yeah, and don't forget, you know, 2,000 fans for any team at the moment in the stadium is going to bring in X amount of money, right? So if you've got an extra 200,000 rand coming in a month,
for the smaller
teams is a lot of money. So let's not forget about the economical scale of this as well.
Exactly.
So, yeah, dude, I don't know. But I think time will tell. Let's move on to something a bit more brighter, a bit more happy, and Bafana's form and 6 points out of the last two games, which is well needed, top of the group. First leg, a lot more convincing than the second leg, even though we got 6 points. Teko, are we nearly there now to the World Cup? Are we nearly there? I mean, this is, I don't think, we got about 6-7 weeks. We didn't really expect us to be where we are, top of the league, top of the log, unbeaten. What's gone right? And where do you see this going? Do you think we're going to qualify?
Sean, I think that's the question that's on everybody's mind.
Yeah.
We as South African, I wish we can. I wish we do qualify for these young guys to get that experience in playing the World Cup. Mm. You know, it's it's a hell of an experience, I think, and the World Cup is the pinnacle.
Yeah.
That's where all the best players go. That's where the best players want to see themselves compete.
Good.
And for us, yes, we do have a huge task. But you know, with a little bit of luck, we might. And looking at the performances as well, we're not very convincing. But we're not expecting a performance that will win us the World Cup. We're hopeful that we qualify so that we can actually, you know, get excited about the World Cup itself. And yes, we do have players that are showing glimpses of their quality, but also I strongly believe as well that, you know, iron sharpens the iron, because I strongly believe that there's certain players that they can be included in the national team and they'll bring out the best in other players as well.
Yeah, we've spoken about that, haven't we?
Yeah, and for that, I think there's a lot of friction in football these days. Where 2 weeks ago, Hugo Bruce came out and complained about not being allowed in the stadium. Blah blah blah. There's a lot of friction in football lately, and I get that. There's a lot of frustrations. I get that, and I respect that as well. You know, but the thing is, I strongly believe that the coach needs to probably maybe put his emotions aside and look at who's performing right now. Who's the best player? Who are the best players at this moment?
Yeah.
Not looking at how old they are. You look at, because for me, I'll say, Sean, we need to copy the best.
Yes.
You know,
copy paste. Yeah.
Exactly. And look at the best countries. Look at the best footballing countries that are playing. You look at their national team. You look at the players. Right now, Italy is doing very very well. You know, and. You look at how the players that they have and the experience that they have, and sometimes we neglect the experience part because we're thinking experience won't help us. But if you get a right mixture of players, because I've spoken about this, that some of the players are playing, they're very talented. Yes, they're playing for a smaller teams where the pressure is way less. Mm-hmm. The responsibilities are way less, and when you come into the national team, you need that experienced players that can handle the pressure, that can perform under pressure.
Yeah.
And I don't think we have enough in the national team. And for me, is that's where the shortfall will come through, when we need experience, when we need that victory that we need to be smart about. That's where the experience will knock us down.
Yeah, I know. And if you look as an outsider, but someone's going to say, Teko, I mean, we're top of the log. What more do you want? Do you know what I mean? And
But we played against Ethiopia, guys. Ethiopia. I mean, really, we don't even have an Ethiopian playing.
So for the listeners out here, what needs to happen for Bafana to qualify? Do they qualify automatically? Are they in other stages or what?
I think we need a victory, you know? I think we need one more victory.
We've got Ghana and Zimbabwe left, I think.
We've got two tough fixtures, and in Ghana we know that they'll bring out the best day, and that will be a fantastic test for our young boys.
Yeah.
Zimbabwe as well, very inconsistent, but it's always a problem playing against Zimbabwe as well. But look, it's possible to qualify.
Yeah.
Right? It's possible to...
That's all we want to hear. It's possible.
It's possible. And I think if the team believes with the right mixture,
yeah,
with the right balance, we it's possible to qualify. It's possible.
Yeah, fingers crossed.
Yeah.
And let's move into this next segment or conversation, which is... I was actually shocked to read that it still wasn't happening, because in my days we used to get drug tested all the time. Teko, I'm sure back in your days it was happening. You would sort of get randomly picked, and obviously.
I wish, Sean, I would say it, for me it was random. It was never random. I was tested all the f***ing time, bro.
You just look like a drug taker, bro. Actually, a dealer. You look like one of the dealers.
Oh man.
But yeah, I mean, so. They said that it's going to be coming back, which I was shocked. I didn't even know it wasn't there at the moment. But I think this has come from the Olympics, and I think we touched on this, Teko, that a few of the players were tested positive just before the Olympics or at the Olympics for narcotics, which is unbelievable. Teko, your take on this? I mean, what's your opinion? What should be done if a player is tested for a banned substance? What in the PSL? We know what the rules are abroad. Obviously, the PSL has its own set of rules and it's very flexible in terms of this. We have seen players being banned for 4 or 5 years before in the PSL. Should there be a ban for life? Should there be what sort of ban should be imposed? And are you a fan of this sort of a drug testing in inverted commas?
Look, I'm a fan of drug testing, but I'm also not sure as to whether things are done properly or not.
Yeah.
I strongly believe. Look, Sean.
Let me jump in there. That's a good point. That still nothing. There has been no investigation done in terms of the Olympic player that were tested for drugs. So just to add on what you're saying, there's still nothing been said about. It's been swept under the carpet, which is which tells me that it was 3 or 4 big name players, and it's just
not just that, Sean. Not just about the Olympic players. Even when I was playing, there's players that I knew that they were smoking.
Yeah.
Whether they were opponents or what, I knew those, but they were still playing. But it's just for me, I was still saying that
I don't know if weed is a performance enhancing drug, right?
But it's not allowed.
It's not allowed.
It's not allowed. There's substances that are not allowed, right? Yeah. And in most cases, you find some other teams when the players in those teams are actually they're self-medicating.
Sure.
And without knowledge, they start taking things that are not supposed to. And when you do test, they come out. But the thing is, if there's no educational background on this, we're always going to have issues, especially when it comes to those big tournaments. And for the fact that there's no consistency with the drug testing within the league itself, there's a lot of gray areas where players now they feel like, listen, Sean, for players to stay professional, they need to know what's happening with the drug testing. They need to see that happening. The last time we had this type of issue, it was a long time ago. And after that, nothing happened after that. And I'm not saying it's a sanction that needs to be taken all the time because of the background of where we come from and all the opportunities that are not there. But I'm just saying there need to be strict rules about it. And those rules, they need to be implemented. When somebody found positive, they need to come out and say so that other players can learn. You cannot, as a footballer, as a professional footballer, go to this game and buy your own coffee mixture.
No,
you cannot. But not everybody knows that.
Yeah,
that's what I'm saying. So sometimes it's not necessarily people taking drugs. It's people taking wrong medication or medication that they think it's okay because everybody buys on top of medication, not understanding that in a football sense, in a sporting world, they're not allowed. And those are education. Those are things that needs to be educated to our players, and they're not.
Yeah, I mean, and just in terms of those Olympic players that were tested positive for drugs, one was, and one was
me.
Yeah, and that is that's insane, dude. Allegedly.
And I'm assuming those players are still playing.
Well, we don't know who the players are, right?
For the fact that Sean, then we still keeping such things secret. For what?
Yes, yes.
We're getting exposed internationally, and then we come back, we're like, I don't know, I don't sit this under the carpet, don't do those things.
Yeah.
For what, guys? And then at the end of the day, we those are the same players that if we don't help them now, they'll never be as good as they should be. They'll never be the great that they should be.
Correct.
We shorten their careers by sweeping such things under the carpet. We need to bear in mind there's a lot of influence. Those players might be very influential, and being influential meaning other guys as well seeing you doing this, they're thinking it's cool, they follow you. Now you have a bunch of players that are doing the same thing. What are you going to do then?
Yeah, 100%. I'm happy that I presume it's the PSL that's taking a stance to this. I think we're both in agreement that it needs to be happening, and I'm actually surprised it hasn't been happening. So, good one on that. Let's move on to this is quite a big story that's been in our papers the last 2, 3, 4 weeks. Even Brandon Trouton, Swallows, a lot of tension in the Swallows camp. He was put on leave, he's come back now. There is so much happening behind the scenes of Swallows, it seems though, at the moment. There was talk of Dadla being put in as the head coach, which he took over when Brandon Trouton was on leave. The results didn't go his way. Brandon Trouton is now back. Apparently, the chairman, Swallows chairman's phone has been ringing off the hook for new coaches to come in. Teko, do you think Braden Schuster's time is up? If so, who's the right guy for the Swallows job?
Sure. Whoever that's available is not good enough. Oh man, I don't even believe that I said that. Look, Swallows there's a lot of history behind the name itself, yeah. And as fans, we want to see Swallows participating and continuing being in the PSL. And you look at all the available coaches, and you look at how also this tutor situation has been handled.
Yeah.
It's very sketchy and scary as well, in a sense that you're giving the coach, you're putting the coach on leave or whatever the case might be, and on the other hand is...
Did you ever see that anywhere else in the world, to put a coach on leave and then he comes back?
Like, no, I haven't experienced that. Wow. But also it's be frank about it. Like, it does with those type of things, sometimes the management think those smaller things, they don't affect the dressing room.
Of course.
And they do affect the dressing room, because there's a lot of uncertainty and also the fear of okay, if this is happening with the coach, now with this new coach that doesn't know us, you know, there's a new coach that doesn't know who we are, what we've done for this team, how is he going to look at us, what system does he want to play. Yeah. But if things are open, out and open, I'm like, okay guys, the tutor is no longer our coach, we're finding a new coach. And then there's facts on the table.
Yeah.
Instead of the suspension, I think Swallows needs to come out and say, or they don't need to come out and say and explain anything. But just if they want to find a new coach, they need to find a new coach as soon as possible.
Mm.
If not, they need to bring Twitter back and probably maybe add on and maybe one of the most experienced or maybe experienced coach. So you have three different heads on the bench as well.
And possibly
give you know, more stability. Because the thing is, we've seen this type of situation where the coach comes through, help the team to get into the league. The first season they're great. Mm. The second season when things are a little bit tough, he's the first one to bounce. Mm. Not understanding the challenges that comes within the league itself. Because at the end of the day, you as a team are the ones that are signing players, and you signing players with the mentality that they're gonna do good, not understanding or not looking at the whole challenges that you or teams that you are direct opponents.
Yeah.
Swallows, the direct opponents are your Cape Town Cities, you know, all the type of stuff, your Barocas and all the type of stuff.
Mm.
But at the end of the day, if things are not clear at Swallows, that's gonna affect the dressing room. And lately, it's been affecting the dressing room, and you can see on the pitch. Just come out and clear things out for the players' sanity as well, for the players to start performing well, because you do have experienced players on the team that can help the team to turn things around. But you need to find a solution. Find a solution.
Yeah, and the names that have been thrown in the hat there are Dan Malasela, Gordon Ingerson, Dylan Kerr. I'm not too sure if what's his name, who's come back from Egypt, was thrown in there as well. But you know, three big names. Let's see what happens. I mean, it's you know, Truta's done well in the past. He's sort of got them back to where they belong. And unfortunately, football can be cruel, as we've seen. But time will tell, Teko. We'll keep our eye on that one. That's some exciting stuff. But from there, we move into our international news desk. And we welcome our world correspondent, Mr. Kurt Buckerfield. How are you, sir?
Thank you, Johnny. I'm good. How are you, man?
Yeah.
Long time,
hey,
man.
Deco? Buckerfield.
Yes, guys.
How are you, happening? Mr. Bucket?
I'm good. I'm off to Spain this weekend, so I'm excited.
Ah, tell us a little more.
I'm going with La Liga. I'm going to go watch Barcelona and Valencia on Sunday night at Camp Nou. Yeah, and then I think we might go to another game, but that's yet to be confirmed. But only a few days, but can't wait.
Wow, when you say we, who's we?
I think it's just going to be, I'm the only guy going from South Africa, but there'll be some other journalists from around the world, yeah.
Okay, and your chick is happy that you're going to be able to have
No, definitely.
Okay, as long as you've got that. Okay, well, that's a nice one. But let's... let's move on swiftly. What is happening in the north of England with Newcastle's financial takeover? Saudi Arabia-led investment group has completed a £305 million acquisition of the English football club Newcastle United, overcoming human rights and piracy concerns to become the latest Middle Eastern owner in the world's favourite sport. What's your take on this, Curtie, and are the local Geordies happy with this?
Oh yeah, I mean, they're happy with it, and I think that's my... Look, it's controversial. I understand why it's controversial. They own 80% of Newcastle United, the Saudi Arabian Public Investment Fund, which is chaired by Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman. And Saudi Arabia has a poor record of human rights abuses, which naturally leads to people questioning whether a state should own a football club. And this is why you'll see Manchester City and PSG get such flack. Mm. Of course, Manchester City funded by UAE and then PSG funded by Qatar. Mm. But the Premier League say that they have received legally binding assurances that the Saudi state will not control the football club, which is kind of ironic given that they own 80%. And then you've got other partners and investors with them in this, the Rubin brothers, and then there's PCP Capital Partners, which is, that's Amanda Staveley, and it looks like she's very much the face of this takeover. She's the one on the training ground meeting the players, and she's doing the interviews.
She knows a lot about soccer.
Yeah, big time. But all of that aside, I completely understand why Newcastle fans are excited.
Mark Ashley was wasn't he?
Exactly, and it was a 14-year dreadful reign where there wasn't much investment in the team. The football's been quite appalling. They've been relegated a few times. So I can understand their excitement. They're allowed to feel relieved that they can look forward to big players coming in and... I personally can't wait to see who they bring in, what kind of signings they make, what manager they replace Steve Bruce with, because we know that's coming very soon. So I think it's going to be very interesting having another mega rich club in the Premier League, because you just know that they are able to afford pretty much anyone in the world, whether top players, want to take their careers to Newcastle right away, this early in the takeover, remains to be seen.
But well, it's only a matter of time, right?
Yeah, but you will see in January, they're going to sign, I reckon, about 4 or 5 players. I think that's got £190 million to spend. They'll probably sign 4 or 5 players, players that, maybe like of the Jesse Lingard level, to try and get them to a point where they are consistently maybe a top 6 team. And then from there, it goes to the bigger signings, and Newcastle suddenly will be, effectively a new Manchester City.
So, in essence, am I right in saying that possibly Newcastle are the richest team in the world, then?
Yes. Yeah. That's what all the reports say. Apparently, they are the richest team in the world, Overnight.
Wow.
Crazy.
Wow. Yeah, that is...
Money.
But let's move on to a bizarre story. PSG star Neymar has revealed that the 2022 FIFA World Cup may be his last for Brazil. And I just want to touch on what he said here, quote unquote, "I see it as my last because I don't know if I have the strength of mind to deal with football anymore."
Yeah.
I mean, are you f***ing serious?
Crazy. I don't know. I think,
what is this like?
So, obviously at 29, those comments are going to be surprising to many. But I think... I don't think it will be his last. I don't think Neymar's going to retire from international football next year. But I do think that there is something weird brewing between Neymar and Brazilian fans, with whom he has seemed to have a very weird relationship with over the last couple of years. Look, remember, Neymar was 18, I think, when he debuted for Brazil. And he was very much seen as like the second coming of Pelé at the time. Everyone was very excited about his career. But since then, he's only won the FIFA Confederations Cup trophy.
Yes.
And that came in 2013 before the 2014 World Cup. And
the Olympics.
The Olympics, but that counts for a major trophy, but not as a major first team trophy. And I think Brazilian fans being... very demanding, given the success that the national team has had in the past. They want the World Cup, and that hasn't been won since 2002. And Neymar, I think when he came in, was kind of the hope, the guy who was going to get them over the line, get them that World Cup trophy that they haven't won in years. I think Brazil are the most successful international team when it comes to the World Cup. So it's understandable that they have such high expectations. And then especially expectations for a teenager who came through and was playing at the highest level in Brazil at 17, 16, and wasn't just, you know, playing well. He was like the best player in the league by quite some distance before he eventually went to Barcelona. And then, you know, in 2018, he has a really bad World Cup where, I don't know if you guys remember, but he was just rolling all over the floor. There were all those memes going around. I think Brazil fans were quite frustrated with him. Also, that was a year after he had left Barcelona for PSG, which was kind of seen as an unambitious move. Why would you go to the French League One in the arguably in the prime of your career? And then he missed Brazil's 2019 Copa America winning campaign through injury. He returned for this year's edition, the 2021 edition, which they lost to Argentina in the final. Neymar had a brilliant tournament, but couldn't get them over the line there. And then since then, he's been accused of being overweight. I think his lifestyle is something that Brazilian fans question, which isn't uncommon for Brazilian players. But no, I think that he has a weird relationship with them, and I think that he feels, or he definitely feels, like he deserves more respect, given that he is, I think, one of their all-time record appearance makers. He is the second on the list for goals. He's just behind Pele. So I think it's a strange one, because if you look at his numbers, you would say Neymar's had a great international career. But
do you think his move to PSG has sort of put him in a different light?
I think so, yeah. I don't think he ever should have made that move at 25 years old. And I don't know if I'm a huge believer in karma, but, you know, since then he's had major injuries, three long-term injuries that I did the math the other day. He's missed, in the last 4 years, Neymar's missed 101 matches for club and country through injuries.
That's a lot of games.
That is a lot of games. Wow. A lot of games. That's a young professional's entire career. You know, like Erling Haaland and those guys. He's missed 101 games. I think 85 of them have come for PSG. So I think that, yeah, I don't think he should have made that move. A lot of off-field incidents. Anyway, it's been weird. He's a great player, but yeah, he's on a bad run of form too. And maybe he's suffering with depression or anxiety. Maybe he's feeling like he can't live up to those standards. And maybe he feels like this is the way of communicating that to the Brazilian fans. Like, look, if you guys aren't going to respect me and treat me better, then I'm just going to go, because what more can I possibly do?
Sure. Okay. A lot to digest there, Curtie, but you can off now to Spain. Thank you very much.
Cheers, guys. I'll speak to you on Wednesday. No, I think I get back Tuesday, so I'll speak to you guys and tell you all about it.
Fantastic.
Lots of pics, eh? Send a selfie. Send a shelfie.
I will. Cheers, fellas.
Oh boy.
Cheers.
So, Aiden, our producer, has kindly sent me a WhatsApp just explaining where we got a bit confused, Teko, in terms of whether Bafana qualify automatically. So there are 10 groups in the African qualifiers. Only the top of each group goes through.
Mm-hmm.
Now there are 10 teams. Those 10 teams then play each other and the top 5 goes through. Come online and explain that, bro, because I don't have a clue.
Oh yeah, I understand what he says. Like after you qualify and within the group itself, all those top teams, they have to play each other, because 5 teams need to bounce from Africa to go to the World Cup.
So there's no automatic.
No. Then with those 5 teams, I think with the 10 teams that are there, I think it's going to be like one of those knockout stages or whatever the case is.
Okay.
I don't know how it's situated, but I know that it's only 5 countries who go to the World Cup from Africa.
Alrighty.
Unless they've expanded the numbers.
Yeah. Okay, so we're not quite there yet.
Yeah, because I think also there's a maybe also with the top qualifiers. I think there's also maybe number 2 or the best qualified number 2 or something like that. But also when you're in the first position, it gives you an opportunity, you know, to play the best on the other side. I think it's something like that. Yeah.
Okay, I got you. Yeah, let's move to the next this next story, which we chat about Chiefs a lot. And if you look in the latest Soccer Laduma newspaper, they talk about five solutions for Stuart Baxter. And basically, with Kaizer Chiefs sitting in 12th position on the log, after six matches, improvements are needed. They talk about settling on a specific goalkeeper, finding a makeshift striker, three defensive midfielders that aren't specifically needed, the use of Ntombo in the back four, and to play Mashini in, back into form. Teko, all these are probably true. I mean, everyone's got their own opinion, but I do think that having your number one as a goalkeeper makes a massive difference to the team. The problem is, I think with Akpai, he's probably the most reliable to get short-term results, but you've got to look at Bruce Boomer. He needs matches in terms of a long-term replacement, right, for Acuna, same as Brandon Peterson. What do you think has to change? I know we've sort of touched on this week after week, but what do you think has to change fundamentally for Kaizer Chiefs going forward? Do you think there needs to be additions made to the team in the January transfer window? The Stuart Baxter just need a bit more time. What's your opinion on this?
I think the coach needs a little bit of more time. With the squad that they have, they do have a really, really good squad. The only issue that I'm seeing is having so many players playing, not necessarily so many players, but players that are really, really good, play out of position, and they're expected to do the business. Yes, they will give you that average performance, but when you play them in their natural positions, I think they're giving you the best that they can. And I strongly feel like Njabulo Blom should be in the midfield.
He's doing well defensively though.
Yeah, but he's not doing great. In the midfield, he's great.
Yeah, it's a good point.
You know, in the midfield, he's great, and I don't think a player of his quality should be sacrificed for anybody. Let them fight for positions in the midfield.
Yeah,
create competition, and I strongly feel that with the Ngobo being, I think it was voted the best defender last season, coming to the Kaizer Chiefs a team where they were struggling defensively last season, I thought you walk into the team because it brings that defend dimension into his play. He's a very confident boy, very comfortable with the ball. I don't see why he should be used as the right back or one of the three. I think use him as his best position because you also want to have your best players in the right positions as well. And I think at the centre backs, they didn't fight for positions. Cardoso and Mato, they'll be marshalling the defence for the longest time. Mm-hmm. There needs to be change there. You bring in Dube, give the boy a little bit of a chance. But of course, now that the things are not really, really going well, it's very difficult to give everybody a chance. But when things go right, you can actually slot him in and give him a chance. But I think Ngobo should be starting at the back.
Yeah, I agree.
And Mshini in the midfield, I think him and Blom last season were one of the outstanding players for Kaizer Chiefs. And the fact that Mshini comes in as a sub, as an impact player, it's really, really, really scary because this is a young boy that was carrying, you know, the whole team last season. And as players to mature, to grow, to become better, we need game time. And I think this boy, irrespective of his age, he needs to be given that enough game time. And let him find positions in those midfield. You know, tweak a system a little bit. Let it suit the players that you have. And I can see what Stuart Baxter also at times what he's trying to do. He's trying to play 5-3-5-2 at the back, you know, where Clanton now is playing higher up. But the Blom playing higher up. The thing is, I get it. I understand it. But you look at the personalities that you have, you look at the energy levels as well. You know, Clante, for me, if I had to coach right now, I'd find a younger left back with more energy and I'll play Clante as a left centre back. You know, because of his experience, because of his calmness on the ball, you know, he can read the game well. Because players mature as well. Because they're on the left hand side with his age, you're exposing him, especially on a 3-5-2 system where he's the only one on the left hand side where he needs to run up and down. and look at the games that he's played all the years also that he's carrying as well. It's not an advantage to your team.
Yeah.
And as for goalkeeping department, I think the goalkeeper coach needs to come into play sheets and be the guy that says, that comes to the coach and says, coach, mm-hmm. I think this and so is ready to lead the team. And with the goalkeepers, it's one position that you cannot rotate.
As
often, because you want the goalkeeper to have more game time to have. Also the defenders as well, and as a team, you need to trust the goalkeeper as well. For me as a player, I always wanted to play with a goalkeeper that I can trust. I don't want to.
Sean Roberts.
Somebody shoots from the center line, it becomes a goal. So where do you want us to defend, chief? I mean, really, they score you from a f***ing center line.
Jeez, come on.
Or they score you, or anybody that takes a shot at you to goal. So how do you want us to defend? So you need a goalkeeper that you can trust, right? And for that, that's where the goalkeeper coach comes in as well. That implements that makes sure that, you know, within the philosophy of the team, which goalkeeper suits this type of philosophy. Because if you want to play from the back, you want to be comfortable at the ball, you can have Vuma in, you can have Itu in. But yeah. if you want a shot stop or somebody that stops the balls, there's a new guy that comes in. What's his name? You just said his name now.
Brandon Peterson.
Yeah, he's good. Give him an opportunity.
Is he injured?
I don't know whether he was injured or not, but for the fact that you've got so many choices, so many goalkeepers to choose from, I think also it gives you, it makes you do unnecessary things. The rotation. Because you've got multiple choices, you know. But I think for me, it's find the stability within the team. Find the core. And even if your philosophy doesn't suit the type of players that you have, try another one, because it's always okay to try something new within the... Because for me also, I don't see Keegan Dole as a winger anymore. Mm. He's not going to give you the up and downs, the 1v1s. He's not that player anymore. He's the player that is now that sees the pass. He's very smart now.
The 1-2s,
The 1-2s, and so play him next to the box. You know, let Kick and Dolly and Mshini fight for positions. The more you create competition within the teams, like I said earlier on, iron sharpens iron. The more you create competition within the teams, the better the players they become.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more, Tekka, and this is why we have you on the show, because of that amazing breakdown. But in essence, I think Baxter deserves a bit more time. And guys need a bit more patience, and the results will come, I'm sure. And don't forget, Nurkovic is only out for a couple more months, so not too much damage done. Let's move on to this week in football history.
Today we remember great moments from the past. We dive into the time capsule. Join us as we remember great moments from this week in football history.
On the 13th of October 2006, FIFA announced its decision to dock Cameroon 6 points in their qualification campaigns for the 2010 World Cup and 2008 African Cup of Nations, all because of the Indomitable Lions wore a unitard. Cameroon had a history of kit controversy after wearing sleeveless shirts at the 2002 African Cup of Nations. Afterward, FIFA told them they could not wear them at the 2002 World Cup, so Puma, Cameroon's kit maker, added black sleeves for that tournament. I remember that fondly, actually. On the 16th of October 2009, Ghana won the Under-20 World Cup, beating Brazil on penalties 4-3, and they did it despite playing most of the match with only 10 men. And on the 18th of October 2005, Thierry Henry scored a brace to lift Arsenal past Sparta Prague on the third match day of the UEFA Champions League group stage. In doing so, he passed former record holder Ian Wright to become the club's top goal scorer. Sure, I also remember that. We're getting old, Teko. Let's move on to place your bets and text. I think you got all of them right last week, actually. But SuperSport at home to Baroka. How do you see this one going?
I think it's a SuperSport victory.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think so too. Chiefs versus Chipper.
I want Chiefs to win.
But are they going to?
Dude, I want Chiefs to win. Yeah. I think Chiefs needs a break, bro. You know, Chiefs needs a really, really good break. And I remember, let me show you this with you. I remember having a conversation with one of the Sundowns coaches after Sundowns played Kaizer Chiefs. I said, Kaizer Chiefs, they looked very good on that day. Mm. And then I said, yo, I'm impressed with how Kaizer Chiefs are playing. He said, if Kaizer Chiefs continues like this, they're gonna make the league exciting. Mm-hmm. And the reason why I'm saying I want Kaizer Chiefs to win is I want Kaizer Chiefs to feel good about themselves and start playing and start winning again, because I know how exciting the league will be. Yeah. Plus, with this conversation of bringing fans back into the stadium, yes. we need teams, other teams, especially big teams, that are performing besides Mamelodi Sundowns. We need that within the league.
Yeah, we do. And if Chiefs are on form, it's probably, in my opinion, the only team to push Sundowns, to be honest, in this league. But don't forget the return of Gavin Hunt as well. So that'll be.
I think the game will be more interesting on the bench than on the field.
Yeah, I agree. Arrows versus Sundowns?
Nah, Sundowns.
Yeah.
Easy 3 points.
And let's move on to the English Premier League. These two games, Leicester versus Man United. Big game.
Yeah, but I think Leicester's struggling. If you see them, they're not even on the top 8. Mm. And it's very weird to see Leicester there. Especially over the last 2-3 years, they've been doing very well. And with Man U, I think they do have the pressure. They do have the main guy that wants to win everything. Mm. So I think it should be a win for Manchester United.
Yeah, I do agree. Newcastle versus Spurs. Obviously, Spurs not ideal start either, with a couple of surprising losses, but a couple of big victories as well. Newcastle just been purchased. The guys will be literally on a high. And I think it's a home game for Newcastle. I'm actually going to go for a Newcastle win, yeah.
I'm a Spurs. I have a soft spot for Spurs. And I strongly think that, of course, with Newcastle will come on the high, but it also comes with so much uncertainty because players don't know that now. We can be sold because quality players can come through because now we got the money.
Mm, crazy.
So it's one of those, you know, situation. But I strongly feel that Spurs needs to bring it home.
Yeah, let's see. I mean, Newcastle fans have been driven crazy lately. And talking about drive, let's move on to the car of the week. This week I've sort of done a mini review of the Mazda BT 53 liter turbo diesel double cab 4x4. Mazda has ditched the Ford routes used for its previous BT50 and now uses both a platform and powertrains from Isuzu for its latest lifestyle bucky. The styling of the latest BT50 is certainly an improvement over the previous model, with the brand adopting the same so-called Kodo design language for the exterior, with a large grille and a chrome surround, compact LED headlamps and a broad lower bumper. While the powertrain is surprisingly good, things start to come undone when the product is presented with anything other than a perfectly smooth road, offering a harsh, bouncy ride reminiscent of Buckies of old. The flagship 3-litre turbo diesel double cab 4x4 is priced at $795,000 and comes with a 3-year unlimited mileage warranty and service plan. My verdict, it's slightly overpriced with the performance you're getting. I believe there are much better SUVs similarly priced out there, so I do give it a 7 out of 10. Damn, I'm getting good at that, eh? But of course, if you can afford 795,000 rand, you've got to be motivated to get there. And this motivation comes from one of my mentors. I forgot his name.
What the
Bob mentor? Proctor. Bob Proctor. Go check out Bob Proctor. He says, learn to always look for the opportunity in every challenge and experience.
Yeah.
I like that. I really, really like it. Yeah, I like it. I thought you might like it, Tekka.
Yes.
But guys, that is how we wrap up episode 91. Can you believe we've done 91 episodes of The Car Wash? Whether you've been listening on SL Podcast at Sierra, Google Play, Apple Podcast, or Mikey Gang 96.7 Game Time, thank you for tuning in. I've been your host, Sean Roberts, and of course, my good friend, Mr. Tekka Madise.
Sure, Sean.
Thanks, my boy, you too. And we'll see you same time, same place, next week in Kozi Kakulu. Ciao.
Today is a great day for a car wash.
Yeah, sure. Car wash. This is the car wash on the SL Podcast. This is a Hlangana Khona.